We want to thank ATI Physical Therapy for helping us power these episodes that were recorded at CSM this year. Have you ever thought about where your career in physical therapy could take you? It's not just about the job, it's about making real connections that help patients get better faster. Imagine working somewhere you can grow through mentorship and get leadership training that matters. Sounds like a place you'd fit right in? Find out more at ATIPT.com.
Tamara, what's your superhero backstory?
My superhero backstory?
Yeah, so you were a clinician. Mm-hmm. Well, even before that, like, so where'd you go to PT school? Where'd you start?
So, undergrad Bowling Green.
Hang on one second. Let me just pull this up just a little bit. Boom.
Hang on. It's going to fall off.
Good. All right, so where'd you go to PT school?
So, Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Undergrad. And then at the time, it was Medical College of Ohio. Now is the University of Toledo.
Well, that's kind of cool. And then, all right. So, what was the career trajectory? What'd you think when you came in the profession? Where did you expect to go? Because I'm gonna guess it turned out a little bit differently. Most of the time, it does. It always does.
Yeah.
So, where were you? You were like bright eyed and bushy tailed, right out of PT school. And where were you going? Where were you headed?
Yep. So, outpatient PT, gonna help the world, fix all the patients.
Good. We need lots of those people.
Maybe did some of that.
Helped right.
Some patients. Got. Couple years in, started down a leadership path, became a clinic director, just really grew into liking leadership, and then company was acquired 10 years into my career, still an outpatient, still hungry for more, really liking leadership, asking a lot of questions, what do I do, how can I get where I want to go, where I don't know where I want to go, but what opportunities are there, and started taking on a couple new opportunities and realized my passion really became leadership and leadership development, coaching other people to help patients because I'm still passionate about the patient, but patient care, maybe not as much.
What's leadership mean to you? No wrong answers, right? I'm not looking for the, you know, MBA, Masters of Business definition of leadership because you mentioned that word a few times.
Yeah.
What's that word mean to you? Like, what about leadership said, hey, this is not something I expected, and now that I've sort of felt this, I want to go a little bit further. So what's leadership? What's your definition of leadership?
That's a great question.
Thanks. I ask questions.
Do you ever answer them? We should turn this around.
Well, I mean, my definition of leadership, I've heard, I started in radio, and all I wanted to do is be on the radio, and then I watched my boss, and I was like, I like being around you. You help me become a better person. And then he was like, that's sort of what his definition of leadership was. I thank you for turning this around. I did not think it was going to be a radio about radio, but I worked for my hometown radio station, and then I sort of was outgrowing it and was looking to now move away from where people knew me. And I went on a job interview at the station, and it was a decent size station, and I went on interviews knowing that the size of a station meant that there were people interviewing for that job. Because in radio, there's like four or five full-time on-air people. Your morning guy, midday, afternoon, nights, and then maybe one other person. And I was sitting there thinking, there's people that want this job that have way more experience than me, but I'm going to give it a shot. The interview will be a great experience. Then I got the job, and then I was comfortable enough to ask, why did you hire me? Because I had heard through the grapevine who else had applied, and I knew some of those people, knew their names, like from across the country. And he said, you felt like a really great cultural fit. And I said, but I don't have as much experience or skills. And he goes, I can teach skills. He's like, I can't teach personality or cultural fit.
Yep.
We had that girl. We had that guy already. You were different, and we had a hole for that. And I was like, oh. And then through our relationship, him being my leader, he's like, my job is to help you maximize what you have now, figure out what else excites you, and how we can use that together to become better. And I was like, oh, that's a cool job. I thought your job was just be in charge and tell me what to do.
Yep.
But it really was. And he had this view of he worked for me, which was, that's not how it is. But ironically, and now it's
servant leadership.
Now this episode just become all about me. So thanks so much for jumping in. But my dad was a New York City fireman.
Yeah.
He went from a fireman in a firehouse with your colleagues, his buddies. Then he became a lieutenant. And in New York City, you can't be a lieutenant where you're a fireman. Can't be in charge of because life and death is on the line. Can't be in charge of the guys you're buddies with because maybe you won't tell that guy to do something because, you know, you don't want to get him mad because he's your buddy. So you float around. So he floated around long enough that enough people left his old firehouse, he came back. There were still some guys there, though, but it was okay. It passed their criteria. And he gave me a lesson was he sort of went in there and said to everybody, I'm not the prototypical, stereotypical boss where everything is my way. He's like, I know how this is. A firehouse is a lot like a family and a fraternity. Just don't make me be that. Don't make me be the boss. You step over the line and do something unsafe, I'm going to be the boss.
Yep.
Beyond that, you guys are all professionals. You do your thing. I'm just here to serve for you. So he also taught me that lesson in an unrelated field.
Yep.
But that's leadership. It translates. So his was the leader works for the people.
Yep.
That's your job. If you're just there to get everybody to work for you, people aren't going to want to work for you. And they're not going to work for you long, in my opinion anyway.
No, I think that's right. And I think I came at it from the mindset as a PT. We lead our patients. We are all inherent leaders. And it's how you're influencing them to get them to do the behaviors that you know are going to fix them. Because we don't fix them. They fix them.
Love that.
So then if you – I started realizing, like, okay, I may not be the best at fixing patients, but I think I'm good at helping people learn how to listen and hear and lead their patients better.
Yeah.
So that influence started making me go down this, like, leadership trajectory of the listening, the influencing, the coaching.
Right.
And servant leadership, certainly.
Let me ask you this. Do physical therapists motivate? Is it our responsibility to motivate patients? There's no right answer.
I often, yes. Yeah, I've said it many times as a clinician, like nobody comes in wanting to be a PT.
Right.
They have a need to be there. Our job is to help them understand that they have to fix themselves.
I like where you say that. It's our job to help them understand. So I go back to the movie Inception. I just talked about this in my, have you seen Inception?
No.
All right, so I'll give you the quick, you don't have to. It's like 3 hours. I'll just save you two hours and 59 minutes.
Okay.
Essentially, these guys can go in each other's dreams, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, that's a great way to be able to get into someone's bank account. We'll go in there and we'll get his bank code. And what they found was, or in the premise of the movie was, you can plant ideas in people's heads. But when they wake up, they reject those ideas because they're not their own.
Yep.
And I like that idea, which is like, I can lead you to the end of the diving board. I can get you super excited. I can paint the picture of what it's going to feel like when you do the double backflip and you hit the water. It's going to be great. You got to jump.
Yep.
So I can get you excited, but I make suggestions. This is the quote from my favorite Peloton instructor. I make suggestions. You make decisions. And I think when I changed that in my outlook, when I was practicing, things got simpler, not easier, but simpler. Is I'm not here to convince you to do anything. I make suggestions. I sort of know within a varying degrees what would be best for you right now, seeing what I can see and you telling me what your goals are. And when I did less convincing, I got more from them because I left an open space to go, I make suggestions, you make decisions. If you want that, do this. If you don't, you'll be back next week and you'll be right where you are.
So what's interesting about that then, because you're talking patient care, which is where we started, but then you turn that into...
Right. Still humans.
Coaching your PTs.
Still humans.
Hearing what they want. How do I get them where they want to go? What is it they want to do? They know that. I don't, and I've got to help figure out that trajectory.
But it's the ultimate cheat code, is because since everything's different, the only thing you need to know from different people that you lead is, I'm going to ask them. They know what they want. Well, most of the time they know what they want. I find direct questions... freeze people up. What do you want to do in the next 5 years? Locks people up.
Yep.
If you ask it, and I heard this great question from another PT. He was running a clinic, and his question on the interview was, if you were to take this job, and 5 years from now you were to leave, what do you think the reason would be? Whatever they tell you then, now it's in a narrative, whatever they tell you is the thing that they most value or want and are afraid to not get or lose. But if you ask them, what are you most afraid to lose, or what is your value, it freezes me up. So I kind of like that's like a zigzag question.
Yeah.
But you get to spend enough time with people that they're probably not. Do they ever directly tell you, or they're telling you?
No,
sprinkled. Yeah,
you're listening the whole time, and you're helping put the pieces together. I mean, my story is a great example.
Yeah. So what is it?
I'm in HR now. Did I grow up and go to PT school and say I think I'm going to go into HR? I didn't even know there was a path to get to that outcome.
Right.
But as passions change, as career maps change, positions open, let me think about that. What do I have to offer to that space? Well, then you start to realize, like, there are a lot of things. there are how many people leaving our profession now?
Right.
2020 was a mass exodus, and I want people to still want to be excited to do what we do.
Right.
You can do a different way. You can go to a different setting, but you can also have different career paths and career trajectories, and I think that's what I'm an example of now.
So what do people tell you? What are the things that pop up? And obviously they're different for everybody, but there's got to be some, if you keep reducing the fraction, if you keep boiling down what people want, I bet you it falls somewhere on Maslow's hierarchy, that pyramid thing. But what do people want in a professional setting? Because what I want at work is different than I want at home, and that's good. But those are two different things, and you should want and expect two different types of things from work at home. But when you see new clinicians, we'll focus on people who are still bright-eyed and bushy-tailed,
yep, right,
in the profession. What are they looking for without maybe knowing or asking or looking for directly? What do you see?
I think it's that they want to know there's a path.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that they may think they know the path.
Yeah.
Because you asked, do you want leadership? Do you want to be the best, an expert? Do you want to go OCI, like certifications? But I don't truly know that they know what the path is.
Yeah.
And so I think, thinking of something like ATI, you don't have to know the path because we've got a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And then you start to find your way along your path.
Okay.
Everyone's path is different.
So if I'm a little confused, right, and then people get restless, especially PTs. I don't want to put us up on a pedestal still, but we're generally smart and motivated, right?
Yep.
When generally smart and motivated people are frustrated, it's amplified because we're used to always going. We went to a 10th grade, then 11th grade, then 12th grade, and there's another class, and there's my mark, there's my target. When they don't even know there's a path, what do you tell them? Let's say I'm a frustrated clinician. I'm great, I'm happy, but I'm like, I don't know that there is a next step. I see that there's this. How do you work with someone in that? Like, what are the questions? Because it's always got to be questions, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you, like, walk me through your thought process with that? Like, what would it be, knowing it's different for everybody?
I mean, where I start with is I would ask what their ideal is.
Okay, good. Start with the end in mind. That's a goal.
What would make you happy? And I don't know if I have it. And I do this with new candidates, but also people that have been here. If you're not happy now, what would make you happy? More often than not, people can't answer what would
Correct.
Make them happy.
Right.
Yep.
The story is, if you ask people 200 years ago what they wanted faster horses and brighter candles. They couldn't envision electricity or cars.
Yep.
But you can say, I want to move more efficiently.
I think the other thing, you asked an interesting question about new grads.
Good.
Sorry.
There you
new
go.
Grads.
Right.
About what they want. But I think anywhere in a trajectory, someone who's a year out, 4 years out, 7 years out, at some point, they become stagnant.
Yep.
And I think nobody wants to be stagnant.
Right.
And so it's just about showing them options. And something may spark an interest because they don't know what makes them happy. So then
Right. If
you spark something, you give them exposure, you give them an opportunity, you give them a stretch, you give them options, and then they find their path. I'm here in HR, and if you had asked me 5 years ago if I ever thought that was something, in recruiting, no.
Well, you're an example of it doesn't make any sense looking forward, but it makes complete sense looking backwards, right? And that's
yep.
like the lesson Confucius said. It's like, life can only be lived forward but understood backwards,
yep.
right? But it's got to be an environment that feels like I'm safe enough to say those things, because if I'm 7 years in and I say to someone, I feel stagnant, that's not something that a motivated person wants to admit. But that's a good thing, because you changed. Now you need the other thing. You need the environment to change. So what makes a good environment for people to feel safe like that?
Well, I think here at ATI, if we talk about what you can feel safe in, is it's our mission, our values. We create safe places, and we create leaders that hopefully are listening and helping you process where you want to get to,
yeah.
and showing you a path that you can do. So I think it's trust. I think it's listening. I think it's innovation, patient care. I mean, all of those things that we do and we promote and we preach.
Yeah.
The hope is that's the safe space.
That's culture.
That's
culture.
That,
right? That's
yep.
You can't touch culture.
Yep.
But you know when it's there, and you very much know when it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know when it's not there quick.
Yep.
You walk into a place and say, this does not feel like the temperature that I want to be in. How do you create that?
Well, we have lots of things. So we can talk about all the different values that we have. So patient care, we're creating outcomes, and that speaks to clinicians and how we say we're going to do something, and then we do that and we deliver on that. You can talk about scorecards, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but our company has a clinician scorecard.
Oh, yeah, Tom
scorecard.
Talked about that. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we can find what you're really good at, and then we can help find what you're not as good at and help foster growth and development.
Yeah, but how great. I loved when, I think it was either Chuck or Tom talked about that. I was like, how great is it to see it? Because if I feel lacking, I just don't know where, but you can see a scorecard, you're like, yes, that's yes, okay.
Yep, but then you can partner with someone who is really good at something.
To fix
and grow.
It.
Yes,
correct.
Not so. Just I've identified it, but now what can we do with it? And we have caseload rounds where we're meeting with our clinic director or our other leaders next to us to say, hey, we're struggling on this patient, that we notice that you are struggling with ankles. Or the person can say, hey, I don't really get how to do this ankle thing. And then we put the opportunities through CEUs or through local town pod meetings or group meetings where we're practicing on each other. So there's lots of different ways to then grow and develop based on what you
get. That's
how
the
we
how.
Mm-hmm.
But the what is that thing that is the, I'm renovating a bathroom right now. It's the grout that holds the tile. It's the thing in between. That's culture. Is you can't see it. It's not a logo. It's not colors. It's not a website or a mission statement. It's how do I feel when it's not a presentation? It's this other thing. And how does this place make me feel about me?
Yep.
Not to say it's all about me, but you need to make sure that I fit here. That's kind of what we want, right? We're social beings.
So it's interesting. When I'm, as a hiring manager, I was a district director prior to moving into this director of talent acquisition. And as a hiring manager, I'm talking to new candidates. I'm listening to them. What is it you're looking for? What do you want? You can't show culture. It's something you feel.
Yeah,
But in an hour or 2 hours they do a site visit, you have to somehow demonstrate it or talk about it. So it's getting into the clinic, going and seeing and feeling is one thing. But I think as I talk about it, I talk about that you have a family connection, you have leadership that listens to you, town halls galore throughout the year, and then changes that occur because of that. That's building that trust. That's the listening. Innovation. What are we bringing and doing that nobody else has ever heard of or thought of? And that's a culture, right?
Yeah.
That we're in a tech world. So thinking about ways that we can use technology to advance practice, to advance collections, to advance patient outcomes. So I think all of those things bring culture. So you can't say, oh, we have a great culture at ATI. I start talking about the things that we do and the programs that we offer, and that hopefully demonstrates our culture.
Show me, don't tell me. Because you can show me a picture of everybody excited at the retreat. Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. Someone else has got that too. But what is it? I like asking weird questions because I'm a weird question guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could say something like, if Nike were to come out with a perfume, what would it smell like? You can kind of picture that because Nike spends most of their time showing you what they're about, right? If Amazon came out with their own brand of coffee, you'd know what you sort of know what that would you would know what to expect. Maybe that's what it is. It's I understand that if I do this, I understand how this is going to be received. It's an environment that allows me to be the most me, and I change over time. Which is something, so you've been, how long have you been straight up doing, you've been with ATI for what, 20?
I've been with ATI for 10 years.
10 years.
Yep.
How long have you been doing HR stuff specifically? And let's not call it HR stuff, let's call it people stuff. That sounds better. How long have you been doing people stuff, leadership things?
Well, that's an interesting question. So okay. I've been a PT 21 years, I'd say 21 years.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
How has the answer to what people are looking for changed? Because like, not only is it individual to people, it sort of comes in ebbs and flows. With the times, how have things changed? How are things different? What were people looking for at a professional level versus where they were 5, 10, 15, 21 years ago?
If I could answer that question, we wouldn't be in the world where we don't have enough PTs and too many jobs. But, you know, I think, sorry.
You're okay.
Falling off. There's definitely a generational change as each new generation comes out. And right now, the biggest thing is, you know, fun, culture, flexibility, technology, how you marry these things together. And I think we do a nice job here of trying to listen to what we want. We don't have to deliver everything, but we're listening when we get feedback, and then we make those changes around it. And we've changed dress codes because people suggested it. We've offered more holidays. We have Thanksgiving day after Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, not working the day after, like, the largest eating day is probably a solid move. It's yes. Like, I don't want to move. You don't want me to move. The Pacers don't want to move. It's like, why are we here? Let's punt this day to
someone.
But
that came from listening to somebody and creating something, right? So I think that it constantly changes. So to say how we've changed, we can say what the evolution of 20 years has been, but it's more important, I think, to listen what today, so how we change the next 2, 5, 10 years for what they want.
Advice. So do you do a lot of first interviews? I mean, you're here at the ATI booth. So this is like, this is not an interview. This is like, hey, how are you? This is who we are. By the way, we have cookies. I don't know if you can smell them in the background. We have cookies coming. The podcast listeners, you can't take advantage of the cookies because they will be eaten by the time you hear this. But what are some suggestions in terms of what questions should they, being the audience, what things do you get excited when people ask you about? Because traditionally interviews are, you listen, you absorb, and we're always taught, ask one or two really good questions to stand out. But I think you should be asking 50, I think you should be talking or asking 50% of the time. So what are questions that you get excited to receive from people who are PTs that are trying to learn about ATI?
My favorite question is when someone asks me why I stay.
Ooh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm.
And then follows up with the why. Because everybody has a story. We all have a story. And I think I have a really cool story. And by sharing that, you show that trajectory. I stay because even at points when my passion changed, or even at points when I became stagnant, or even at points when I became slightly frustrated, I had someone I could go to and talk to about it. They listened. I tried different opportunities, and I've managed to move into ways that allow me to continue to do what I love and love what I do. And I'm still influencing my profession in a way that I never would have foreseen 21 years ago. But yeah.
See, even if someone is like, I feel like even if someone hears your story is like, I don't want to do any of that. But what I heard her say was she did some stuff. She changed. She didn't want to leave because she liked the vibe, the culture. So then she found another thing. And if it didn't exist, to a degree, you could create it. Like, that didn't exist, so we'll create it because it brings value.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a clinician voice. I mean, a lot of our organization right now in influential positions are still clinicians.
Why do you think that is?
Because we're the best.
Because we're the best. But why do you think that? In my view, when I hear that, it says, it's easier to you don't have to explain it.
So a good example, when I considered this position, an HR director of talent acquisition, the first call I made was, why would an operator succeed in this position? Because I couldn't see it.
Because previously you had no HR experience.
I mean, other
but you
than
have people experience.
People leadership.
But
and
this
people,
is this yes. is specific.
This
right?
is specific.
This is a new set
with
of goals.
No experience on that side of the house, if you want to call it. And as I asked questions, made me not sleep at night because I was excited about it and thinking about how I can influence people coming into the profession and being able to tell our story outwardly and bringing people in to come join that family got me excited. Fast forward into a couple months into the role, and I now look back, we're talking about looking backwards versus forward. Looking back now, I don't know how it could not be a clinician, a former operator, and the influence that it comes in, because there needs to be a connect cross-functionally, and we do that. The collaboration, that's another one of our 5 key values. The collaboration that needs to be inherent, and some of it is, because I'm a clinician, I don't have to ask those questions, but I can coach our recruiters. What are we talking about to candidates? What do they want to hear? And where we started, they don't know what they want to hear.
Right. They don't know.
We have to anticipate what they want to know. The grass isn't greener. Someone's going to tell you anything, but make them show you. Make them, like, test the waters. Go in the clinic. Sit there for a couple hours before you join us. Watch, listen, and learn. Feel what we have to offer.
You're saying all my favorite words. Show, listen, learn. I gave presentation to researchers yesterday, and the overwhelming thing I wanted to repeat, because as you're presenting or talking with a human, because that's what presenting is, I try to bring it down. I'm reading them, and I'm seeing a little bit uncomfortableness or fear. And I kept repeating so my presentation was how to communicate their science. I am not here to tell you how to be a better researcher. I don't know a lot about doing the research, right?
Yep.
I'm not here to do that. But you're telling me there's a pain point on releasing publishing the research and then getting all of us to understand it and hopefully use it. So I kept saying, this is simple, what I do, to me, but it's not easy, but I can also teach you how to do it. And half, you know, I think the presentation was 2 hours, and I started to see people warm up. But what I was doing was, and I cheated a little bit too, is I ran the presentation by researchers that I knew who were honest with me and go, I see what you're doing here, but maybe do this instead. And I was like, okay, great feedback. Because I don't know my audience that well until I look and listen and sit and absorb and do all those things.
Yep. It's very true.
Where's the future of our profession going? No pressure. This is a large question. But you have probably one of the best vantage points because you're hearing from the people that in five or 10 years will be the bell. There's the bell curve, right? Yep. Like, I know they're fresh and bright out of bushy tail right now. They're going to be in charge in a blink of an eye, right? So what excites you about the future of PT?
That's a great question. I don't think I'm smart enough to anticipate the future of PT.
All right.
What excites me?
Yeah, what excites you?
The future here and how we can influence the future of PT.
Yeah.
As a large organization, we can advocate. There's a lot of constraints on us right now. There's a lot of schools that want school to go longer. There's insurances that want to pay and reimburse less and devalue what we do. A platform like we have is a very loud voice and what we can advocate. So I don't know where it's going to get to. I'm not that smart. There's people smarter than me for that. But we can influence it.
Yeah.
And we can help that trajectory along the way by listening, creating a – we have outcomes, 3.7 million outcomes in our database. If you can't use that data, those smart people can't use that data to figure out how to help our profession in the future, that's not me.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are the things that I get excited about, how we can influence where we're going.
I forget who said it, but they said the best way to predict the future is create it, right? Did you ever watch The Matrix? End of The Matrix, Neo's in the phone book, and he calls, like, you know, the bad guys, and he's like, I don't know how this is going to end, but I know how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do another thing. So it sounds like you keep... You stay, what was it? You stay rigid but flexible, right? Your goal is to maintain steadfast but with flexibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Constantly non-constant.
Yeah, the only constant is change.
Change,
yes. How many quotes or cliches can we get into one episode? I don't know.
You got a lot going. I haven't been...
I'm good at remembering the quotes, and then most of the time I can give credit to people, but I'm never trying to steal it. I'm like, someone else said this. I can't remember who, but I know it was.
Yep.
Every episode we do a parting shot. Did they prepare you for that?
Maybe I got a clue on that.
Parting shot is just like, what's the thing you'd want to leave with the audience? What's the mic drop moment? Just something you'd want to have them remember. If they were to walk away from this episode learning one thing or feeling one thing, remembering one thing, what would it be?
I would say, always strive to do what you love. Love what you do, and you can do it here. You're going to grow with the best here with us.
Yeah.
Because what you love may change.
Yeah.
But you can find a new path.
Yeah. Tamara, appreciate the time. I know you're like, this is like your Super Bowl here. So thanks for doing this and letting us steal you away from all the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed PT students. They're the energy.
Yeah.
When I was a PT student, I was excited for this.
They also have no idea what's in store.
They
That's
have
the
no
cool
idea.
Part because was it having done this, you get to look back and go, if I only knew then what I know now, and their futures are so bright.
And I was a second career, I was a second career professional, so I was like, I know, because I'm older. And then I was like, I have no idea what I'm going on. Out of your PT, I know we already did the parting shot, but we can keep talking. Out of your PT school class, what percentage of them knew where they were going to go and what they were going to do and actually did it? Because I remember so many in my class were like, I'm going to do this, and now they are doing...
Oh, well, if you look where they are now, 20 years later, nobody is.
Right. It's wild.
Your path changes.
It does.
That's the key. And you should constantly be trying to figure out what keeps you loving what you do and find a path. Like, there's a path for it. And ATI has a great place for that.
Yeah.
So.
I heard another great quote, and it's going to shock you. But it's like, you know, it was more of a story or an allegory where the guy was like, he went back to visit his friends from high school, and they said, you know what, man, you've changed. And the guy just looked back and goes, that's the point. You want enough to stay the same. That's what your core is.
Yeah.
But the point was, you've changed, man. He's like, that's what growth is. Growth and change are the same thing.
Maybe also aging.
Also aging, looking at things from a different point of view or having enough repetitions
sometimes
under your belt.
Sometimes you say you're older. I just call it wiser.
Yeah, I'm going to call it wiser. Yeah. I also, looking in the mirror this morning, did feel a little grayer, though. But day two and a half of CSM, I'm sure the color will come back to my
just
face.
Just wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. Tomorrow, we're in the home stretch.
Yeah.
Tamara, appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much.